welcome to the Volunteer Firefighting Podcast. I am here with two members of my firefighting family. I had to count. I've got Ash.
Oh, hey there.
We've got Scott.
Hey.
And we have a special guest tonight. We have Kyle. Say hello, Kyle.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. So, Kyle, Tom Nay, comes from Verona Volunteer Fire Department.
Verona.
That's good. So east of Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. So, Kyle, why don't you say hello to everyone, give yourself a little introduction, and we'll go from there. Tell us a little bit about your department.
I've been around the service my whole life. I'm fifth generation. What am I trying to? Oh, I've been in my department for 10 years. It was the first department I joined a couple years ago. I moved up to lieutenant and been trying to make improvements since.
Awesome. How did you find the changeover from the firefighter up to one of the officers?
That was different. The first week that I was lieutenant, everybody in my department except for me got COVID, so I was kind of thrown to the wolves. And then my first call as an officer was a two-alarm structure fire. So it was a huge, huge, huge change.
With us, a lot of the time in the past, it was always by vote, during elections and stuff for your terms. Now I know for my department, it's all application process and interview. And then qualifications leading up to it. And you guys are going to that as well now.
Yeah.
With your guys' department, so you guys are all 100% volunteers, so no paid on call, no full-time staff.
Correct.
Yeah. How do you guys do your transitions from firefighter to officer? Do you guys have terms, or what do you kind of run?
We are not voted on. There's no application process. We are actually appointed by our chief, which seems to be the only department that does that. I don't know anyone else that does that. But no, there's no like term limit or anything. As long as you're doing your job and keeping going, you're pretty much, you're still there.
Interesting. Do you guys do any sort of annual review or just to make sure that you are still hitting the mark? Or
I think we're going to be implementing that here soon.
Nice.
We had a leadership change, I guess, for lack of a better word, and we're trying to implement things like that now.
Right. You said you were fifth generation for that.
Yeah.
So the first guy in the line, what was he, like running horses? Or how was that?
I actually have a picture of my aunt. Well, let me back up. My family tells me I'm fifth generation. That could be skewed. But I do have a picture of my ancestors next to a horse-drawn hose carriage. If I have a, it's hanging up on my wall. I'll get a picture of it for you guys.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. Todd's almost been around
It's pretty cool. Did you have a chance to be on the department when your other family members were on as well? Or?
I'm actually in a different department than my family members were. I'm just, that as far as the service goes, I'm generational. Right. I wanted to join that department, then we moved and too far away. So I'm at where I am now.
Awesome. That's still all connected though, right? Like you said, keeping that flow going. That's pretty cool to see that carry on through the family ties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were talking a little bit earlier about just kind of strategies, tactics, small towns, medium towns, big towns, all the above. Is there anything you guys want to touch base on? Or
I guess our thing we mentioned it. We always talk about the roof versus positive pressure.
Yes,
positive pressure. So you guys out east. And I don't know if it's out east Canada too, but out east, it's always a roof.
Yeah.
You hear out here, we never go on a roof. I shouldn't say never. We rarely ever go on a roof, especially if we're venting. So out there, yes, that's what you guys do for tactics?
Yeah, we do almost every fire I've been to, unless it's self-vented through the roof, we are up there cutting a hole in the roof. I don't know. To me, it just makes more sense. That's the way the smoke's going to go. Yeah. That's the way it wants to go. Lets the heat out, lets the smoke out.
Right.
I'm a big fan of hydraulic ventilation as well. After you knock it, but, yeah, it almost always we're cutting a hole in the roof.
I wonder where that line or the divider happened.
I don't know.
Cause I know, like out here, like we obviously look at it as a safety thing. I don't know how many, like we always, you know, we see videos. I'm sure you guys see videos of the positive pressure going wrong as well. We always see videos of every video has of a guy falling through a roof. So maybe that's
There was a video out of California that I think it was a captain fell through the roof.
In a garage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's when we all, you know, it always gets shown. This is why we don't go on roofs anymore. Actually, we did a course. Same course.
That's right.
And basically, a major city, and they don't go on the roof at all. Like we'll still go on the roof when it's needed, but these guys are like, no, we never.
It's like hard and fast.
Hard and fast. Never go on the roof. We're like, holy cow. That's a major city here in Canada, on the West Coast anyways.
And pretty aggressive as well.
Yeah, very aggressive fire department. But yeah, they've made a policy. Never go on the roof now. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting how the difference is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With your structures out there, is it older mostly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's very, very little. There might only be like a couple structures in our town itself that are new construction. In neighboring districts, we have new construction, but very, very little in our own.
And I wonder if that has something to do with the roof thing, because out here with all the new construction, the roof trusses fail so quickly. So that could be the reason why we've always just stuck with the positive pressure.
Yeah, we had a structure fire a few years ago. It was in new construction, and we were on scene pretty quickly, and there was already fire through the roof. There was no going up there at that point.
Yeah, I guess having said that, like we just had a fire here last week, and it was an old house, lath and plaster and all that. And, I mean, it had a metal roof, but even without the metal roof, I think it probably would have been a viable roof to cut if we were so inclined.
Yeah.
Just because it's definitely one of those older structures. So maybe that is why we don't go on roofs.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the new construction.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like back in the day, the conversation always was as well was the style of our roofing. A lot of them were steeper pitch for the snow loads in certain communities. By saying that, of course, this isn't the typical Canadian stereotypical, you know, igloo and we're surrounded by snow. We live in a desert, for the record. But, you know, like there's always the roof types and the pitch, and then depending on your height structure as well. But like see, even shit going back 20 years, like we didn't do a whole lot of roof ops. We definitely did some.
Fun, but yeah.
But nothing like down south. I know the one thing we always make fun of the American fire departments is there a water shortage down there? Because we never see water on the fire.
I think there's. We try to get water on the fire as quick as we possibly can, obviously, but. I know when you watch some of these videos, it's like it feels like you're sitting there for 10 minutes before they get water on. But I don't know. I don't know. Around here, we try to get it on pretty quick.
Yeah. And maybe it's because that's what gets the clicks when firefighters screw up. That gets more clicks than when guys are doing really good work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Versus when it's when guys are like, look, these idiots. It's taking them 10 minutes to get water on.
The YouTube channel.
That might be it. And obviously, the population of America is much greater than Canada. Probably more firefighters in Canada than there's, or in America than there's citizens in Canada.
You might be right.
But it's interesting, you know, like all jokes aside, like, you know, like the knowledge of all the studies and stuff that have been out there now, as far as just getting that exterior water application so rapidly, and it could be a short amount because a lot of our rural areas for our area, you know, No, we depleted that half a tank in no time. And now we're waiting for shuttle tenders back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that takes a little bit of time to start mobilizing and getting water. So it's definitely challenging.
Yeah. On that, what's your guys' water supply like? Do you have a lot of hydrants in your machine?
Oh, yeah, we have a ton. I might have only been on a couple calls myself with a tanker or tender, but no, we're hydrant operations are huge here.
Nice.
Hmm. Yeah, we're almost the opposite. That fire, that was the first time I think I hit a hydrant in quite some time. I guess we did the car fire a few weeks ago, but yeah, yes. We normally, it's all tender work.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I probably wouldn't even know what to do if I had to run tanker operations.
Yeah, it'll be challenging. But
yeah, I mean, that just brings in a whole other level of, water usage. And I mean, it's cool to see studies of how much water application is required to put out a single room of contents versus something that's gone up into the structure. One thing that a lot of firefighters are good at is filling basements with water. So when you're attached to a hydrant, it's super easy just to keep flowing. I mean, when you have an endless supply of water, eventually the fire is going to go out when it's, submerged. But once you have a finite amount of water, when it's coming from a, water tender tanker, you have to be a little bit more switched on with your water application, which...
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
It's just another thing that you have to be thinking about, especially as an officer.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you guys do a lot of mutual aid as well, like your district. How large, what's the kind of the footprint? You said it was like 2,500 people in your community?
Yeah, and we're about, I want to say like 2 square miles. It's not big. I mean, you can drive from one end to the other in a couple minutes. But we do run a lot of mutual aid. Our mutual aid footprint's a lot larger. But, it almost seems like you guys don't run mutual aid. Almost every single call, we have somebody coming into our area or we're going into their area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mutual aid definitely is a... it's not a common, maybe 2 or 3 times a year.
Right.
Probably I'd say. Mm-hmm. It's not out of 400 calls, like 2 or 3 times a year is actually that many. So, we just did it last week, but that was the first time in a long time.
Yeah. Wildfire. Since the big wildfires. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was perfect to have you guys, obviously, with the way things were progressing. But, that was pretty interesting, but we don't utilize it as often. But thinking if you're just over two square mile, I mean, what's our downtown core? I mean, it's probably very similar footprint to Oliver proper. We just have such a vast rural district that we might be that 2 square mile, if you will, right in the middle, but then we're 6 times further as our coverage area expands. And it's very rural. It's very, we got some intermix. We have some interface, sprinkled, towards the outskirts, which obviously bring a lot of different tactics there as well. So for you guys, how dense is the population everywhere that you respond to? Do you have, is it all city or do you have some, wildland wooded areas that you guys look after or maybe would go and mutual with?
We would have a better chance of going mutual aid with a wildland situation. But even then, I think I've been on 2 brush fires in my career. What was I going to say? But as far as population density, the areas that we run into are definitely, they're pretty populated. We don't, obviously you have your pockets where you could have a brush fire or a wildland fire, but it wouldn't get too out of control.
It's not even kilometers or miles of burnt forest.
No.
Yeah. Right. I guess they always the other question is combination or smoothbore? Always the.
We have these nozzles that when you pull the bail back, it turns into smoothbore. So I'm a big fan of that. I don't have much experience with a smoothbore, to be honest with you, but it is as much controversy as there is with it. I would like to give it a shot and make my own assumption.
Yeah, and we definitely recently we picked up another inch and a half smoothbore that we've been kind of testing. We're actually thinking of running like smoothbore on one side and combi on the other side, just for that duality.
Right.
And then obviously the one off the back, or two and a half, is a smoothbore, just for that deluge, which I think we've talked about.
And
we had that running on that fire the other day, and you know, it just the amount of BTUs that they can knock out compared to the combination when we used to use it, and the fact that you can run it on such a low volume, low pressure.
Because
Simon and Brett in front of the truck. He said he's running it at the right
pressure.
I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, some guys run it really hot. And that's, I think, the biggest thing. Guys run that, they run that smoothbore like at the PSI of a combination nozzle, and it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah, and that's, I find, when we're teaching new people some new pump ops, working with the hose streams and stuff as well, is they'll usually get that wrong. They're usually overpressuring the smoothbore, whether it's inch and a half, inch and three quarter, or even just that blitz line, that two and a half, right?
Right.
But once you use it more and more, you can tell quickly by just the droplets and how it disperses out the tip pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, run a two and a half smoothbore, it's very easy by yourself. Versus,
yeah.
What is the right pressure?
Yeah, exactly. It's the right pressure. Versus that two and a half pump.
Yeah. And like any high rise or apartment back ops should obviously be ran through a smooth bore if at all possible, just because we know that's an awesome stash spot for debris, blah, 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 and those standpipes. So, and we went back to, like, we got some pretty frigid temperatures here, and we've actually frozen up lines running our combi nozzles, where ice will start to form in the line and will actually jam at the tip. If that was wide open, it would just shoot out. So, in theory, yeah. So we haven't.
That's a theory this year.
We are going to be. Well, I don't know if we'll try to freeze shit up, but if it happens, then we'll see what the smoothbore does.
Yeah.
So you guys still get pretty cold temperatures just outside of Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah,
colder than us probably. So, do you guys find any issues like with what you're running for your trucks or anything different on them?
There's been a couple times we ran a dry pump. We haven't done that in a few years. If I'm the driver and pump operator, I pull up and it's usually below 37, 36 degrees Fahrenheit, I'll put the truck in pump and just circulate the water. Mm-hmm. If we have lines off, just crack the bail open, and that seems to do pretty good. Don't seem to have too many issues with that. We've seen departments freeze pumps and freeze tanks and bend waterways on their ladders when they're trying to retract them back in because they froze. But as long as you keep the water flowing, you're fine.
Yeah, that's going to go too as well. And then the guys quickly realize that they have to pay attention to where they're dropping that nozzle with it being cracked, because otherwise you got a skating rink.
Yeah.
Before you're working. So. But tell us a little bit about your area for rescues. Like, what do you guys run? Do you guys run highway rescue or rope rescue or water rescues?
We are right on a river. So we have two boats. That one boat is always in the water. As far as rescue goes that we actually run, that's really it. If we have any kind of vehicle rescue or rope rescue, we actually call in mutual aid because we do it so seldomly. Not to say that we shouldn't train in it, because we still do train in it, but for us to spend the money on the equipment is, I don't want to say outrageous, but it just doesn't add up sometimes. So the two companies that we use for mutual aid for any kind of vehicle rescue or high angle rescue or anything like that, they're sometimes they beat us there to the call, which is, as far as I'm concerned, fine with me. You know, if they can get somebody freed or out of the situation they're in, that's fine.
So your guys' response model, you'll still get paged out for the call as it's within your jurisdiction. You guys will respond. Is that an automatic mutual aid that you guys have set up, or do you have to ask for it based on the details that are coming through?
It's an automatic mutual aid as long as all the calls come through dispatch correctly. As long as they get the all the details from the caller right. There are times when you get on scene and you say, "Oh, I need this," and I mean you can call them in; it's no problem. But usually, it's automatic.
That'd be helpful. Yeah. some occasions. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys run like a first responder model, or have like paramedics or EMTs on the truck in your department? I know like some departments run the ambulance out of the halls, or what do you guys have for that kind of cross cover?
A number of years ago, we actually ran an ambulance service here. We no longer do that. We do have, I think, two EMTs here, but they're affiliated with other agencies. They're not necessarily affiliated with the fire department itself, but we do have them in case we need them. Yeah. But they went off on their own to get that certification, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So is it a state run ambulance, or is it a county run? Or
I'm sorry, you cut out.
Is it state run, or is it county or private, or how does your service, like ambulance service, work?
It's private. It's all private ambulance service.
Second job.
That's very impressive.
Some of the things that we're passionate about and what you're passionate about. You want to talk about anything specific with the fire service, some of your passions that you've been bringing into it and making change within your department?
Actually, some of the changes that we have made, or some of the changes I'm trying to push for, is getting that real life inoculation that you guys talk about all the time to get the stress levels up. A lot of our training for a long time was slower paced. And as anybody in the fire service knows, that's the last thing you want to be, is slow paced. And it makes learning a lot tougher. So what I'm working towards now, and some of the other guys too, we're working towards getting that pace up, getting that speed up, and trying to get that training up to like more of a real life situation, as best as you can.
So with that, do you guys have a local training center, or like how often do you guys practice?
We meet at the hall every Monday night. We try to practice 2 months out of the month, or 2 Mondays out of the month. I'm sorry. But we do have a training center. It's actually fairly new. It's in one of the communities that we run mutual aid into, and they let us use their facility. For us to have our own would be very tough with where we're from, but we have that we can use. We have a county training center. They put on a lot of classes up there, and you can go there and get your certifications and your essentials, and then go on from there to get whatever else you would like.
Yeah, I think because the big thing we really like doing is that that high fidelity training, like you do all your training, don't you layer it in and then do a scenario-based training, right? Make it as realistic as we can in a training environment, and that stress inoculation, right?
Yeah.
And since you need it, like, if set off some smoke alarms, create some smoke, turn off the lights, like, make things difficult, loud. Like, you know, the last one at seminar that you taught, Scott, you had a speaker playing.
Yeah, screaming and yelling. I heard a quote today from a guy who teaches, like, gunfighting tactics, and he was like, because he's been in a few gunfights, and he said, experience with consequence sucks. Because if your first experience in a gunfight is consequences, you're going to die. So that sucks. He goes, experience without consequence is training. So basically that's because what we do, we train, but there's no consequence at the end. Like, we're not going to die if the roof is not going to collapse, hopefully, in the burn building. Or, you know, I mean, people might get hurt, but there should be no real danger of the consequence of not finding a dummy instead of fire. That doesn't mean we left a child inside a building.
Right.
So yeah, I really like that because it's that consequence is what the training's missing. And that's what is allowing us to train more, because if there's consequences every time we train, we're not going to train. if there was like the life is actually on the line every time we train, that wouldn't be very good. But realistically, if you don't train and you're out in the world, that consequence, that's where your experience comes from.
And it's crazy, like, we know departments that are like that, but, you know, they're only hands-on is when it's a live event. And, you know, some of them might be volunteers, some of them might be full-on staff. You know, they don't utilize their extra time, their off time, to go out and train. And, like, that just blows our mind. I don't care if it's every week, if it's twice a week, if it's once or twice a month. Just finding that time to go out there, getting hands-on tools, you know, getting that muscle memory and, like, really, you know, working on that craft. And, like, you know, these guys were saying, making that stress level high. I don't think there's really no other replacement for that. And you can't mimic that in real life because of those consequences. So, yeah, it's cool to hear that you know you guys have a couple areas around you. When you go to train at your mutual aid hall, where they have a training facility, is that fee for service there, or are you allowed to train there for free, or where you go? And then secondly, you say there's a government funded one. Is that a fee for service, or do you guys have access to both of those facilities on the house?
The one in our mutual aid district, we pretty much have access to that whenever we would like. And usually if we're going up there, we're going to invite them to go along. In that township, they actually have 6 departments. So they're a lot larger than us. So maybe we'll invite a couple of their departments that we run with more often. But, yeah, we pretty much have access to that whenever. As far as the government facility, that's more of like a, like signing up for a class and going up to their academy and doing it. You don't really have any kind of access to it.
Do you guys have access to like acquired structures in your area?
Seems like every time we try to look at one, when we go inside, it's not happening. Because they've been sitting for too long.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules and regulations to make an acquired structure work. You got to have it down and hold it.
And basically not a structure anymore.
basically almost not a structure anymore. Versus back in the day, the acquired structures that we had, we just went and started fire.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the person hasn't moved out. They're like, I don't feel like moving my furniture. It's like, I'll be a boiler.
It's not really fun. Yeah. Oh, man. So let's talk a little bit about resilience and whatnot within the fire service and emergency services. So we talked about, you know, like all of us, like everybody kind of shares a little bit of a personal story with it. And just the importance of, you know, having that time to debrief and bumper talk and kind of what we do as organizations for support, whether it's a SISM team, like critical incident stress teams, What kind of structures do you guys have out in your department?
Once again, that's actually something that we're trying to implement more. Not to say that before we wouldn't have had something if we needed it, but now it seems to be more out there with leadership coming to you and saying, hey, if you need this, let me know. If you don't, okay. But yeah, I'm trying to get that more of like an official, like debriefing, I guess you could say. But as far as the bumper talk, that's almost after every call, after every training, after every event we do, any kind of public event, we come up here and we're usually here for another hour, 2 hours, if we need it.
Yeah, the bumper talk definitely just happens naturally, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or even after a scene occurs, if we're hanging around on scene for something, it usually starts right then. We're at rehab, drinking a bottle of water, you know, whatever we're doing, the bumper talk just naturally progresses.
Mm.
Yeah. I find it's very important, you know, like we look at a lot of, we do the bumper talks that we talked about. Okay, well, when is a time or an event that we need to do an actual debriefing or just a simple peer check-in? So one thing my service does, we do a lot of peer check-ins. And I think we're going to be seeing more and more of that fall into the fire service as well. So rather than saying, hey, everybody on that event, you know, that one homogenous group of firefighters that were just involved in that event, we're going to have a sit-down debrief, which is potentially good, but also you may not need it. So one way to kind of find that out is, well, let's do some peer check-ins. So if you have some of the members in your department trained through the SISM programs and have the Safe Talk experience, to be able to just phone up somebody and say, hey, man, you know, just check in with you. You know, that's a pretty crazy call. You know, and kind of evoke how they're feeling and what you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. It's important not to talk too much about tactics on there. Sometimes that stuff just flows naturally into the defusing, debriefing type of scenarios, which is okay because that's part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to see a lot more of that, just that simple, like, hey, let's just do a quick little phone call over to Scott, see how Scott's doing.
Which I think, without the training, I think that's what we used to do, we still do. You know, the officers all, who was on my truck? Oh, I got these four guys on my truck. I'll call them or I'll message them. Messaging is a little harder because you don't really get their tone.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, good. Oh, was that good or is that
thumbs up?
Yeah, just a thumbs up. actually calling them or meeting them face to face.
Yeah.
Because then you can kind of see
actually
their reaction to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the tactics, like you said, you don't want to get bogged down in the tactics, but maybe the tactic is what was bugging them. Like, oh man, like I feel bad because it went south because I did this and I should have done that. So, and then that's kind of when we talk tactical side of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's two ways to get away from that too. Like, see, if we have a larger scale event, I think it's important we can sit down and do an operational debrief and say, hey, this is strictly operations, right?
Mm.
Here comes Scott's 2-star and a wish, right? Talk about that. And then you can kind of pick out, say, okay, well, who do we want to talk to as well? It helps get everybody talking and communicating. And then that might make me feel like, hey, you know what? That call is a little fucked up in my head. So I'm going to go talk to one of the officers or one of the peer team members or whoever, right?
Right.
Or if you don't have that in your department, hey, who do I talk to for a contact information to get a trained counselor, trauma-informed counselor to get that going? Because as we know, you know, like just that stress leading up to post-traumatic events, to post-traumatic incidents, to post-traumatic stress, you know, there's a lot of things we can be doing to build that resilience in ourselves just to kind of process everything. It takes a while.
Yeah.
Process events.
Do you guys have anybody specifically in your department that you guys kind of lean on, or do you have services outside? Like, we've had services that we always say, you know, there's always someone there to talk to, there's always people. But now, like Todd was saying, like, he's part of a team for his other job. And then, like, you guys are starting to build one for mm-hmm. within your hall. And I can see that coming here. Do you guys have a team or a person, you know, within your actual department, that, you know, kind of looks after that?
I don't think there's anybody, probably nobody specific. But we do, I mean, we all look out for each other. With us being a smaller department, it would be hard to have a team, I think. We all talk. I mean, it's better than it used to be for sure. But we do have a service outside of the fire hall that we can contact. And if we need to talk to somebody, then we do it. Definitely every time we have new guys, I always tell them that's one of the most important things that you can do is just get out and talk to somebody and take care of yourself for sure.
So having a smaller membership like you guys have, what's kind of the age gap? Like, you know, we always talk about getting that newer blood in, and like people are products of their environment. Do you have quite a large age gap from, you know, rookie member to seasoned firefighter, or what does that look like for you guys?
I think our oldest active member is 60 or 61. And our youngest is, he just graduated high school. So we do have a pretty good range, and it seems to be like a pretty good stepping stone between the gaps. When I joined, I was 18 or 19, and I mean, I'm 30 now. So, you know, I kind of clung on to the younger members at the time, but we have a pretty good gap, and it's good because you get that new blood with the newer tactics, but you get that experience from the older guys.
100%. Mm-hmm.
Do the older guys embrace the PTSD system stuff, or do they
rub
some dirt on it?
Not all of them.
Rub some dirt on it, grab a bottle of whiskey. Maybe,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. You guys have, you said those one just graduated high school. Do you guys have like a little high school like recruiting program at all, or do you pull anybody in from school?
We have a junior program. You can start at the age of 16. You have to live in our area. But we do want to get into the high schools and try to start recruiting people. I think that's kind of our, we have to do something. I mean, you got to get the young guys in when they have the time to get the schooling in.
Right.
Especially, I don't know, do you guys have a minimum, like a minimum amount of hours you got to take for training?
With our provincial standard, I don't think it's a minimum amount of hours. It's just you have to complete certain aspects of what's called, it used to be called the playbook, now it's minimum standards. You just have to complete the JPRs, so the job performance requirements for each stage, so like ladders, knots. So sometimes if the class is really switched on, we can go through a little faster, and if they're, you know, slower, it's like, okay, well, we'll have to revisit this about five more times. It's just kind of ongoing. So there's not really I don't think there's really an hours standard for us anyways, probably for you guys, because you're more
we're pro ward the same. So we do the pro ward, well, the 1001 firefighter program and whatnot. But I think like more so even just like the showing up for practices and tracking hours of practices, yeah, and training events and things like that. Like, we still keep stats on your percentages over through the year.
Yeah.
And we try to have a minimum standard of, I think, I can't remember what it is, 70% or something like that.
Yeah.
But I know you guys are.
Yeah, we kind of have a point system now, actually, that, you know, the guys, if they're missing too many practices and their points don't stay up to snuff, and then get talked to. But for the most part, I think practices are, like that, and the chief always reiterates that, and as a training officer, I always reiterate that. I think practices are more important than even going to calls. You know, obviously, we want them on those big calls, and we need everybody, but the practices is where, like, we need to know they know what they're doing. So if you come to, if you come to every call, but you never come to practice, well, that's going to be bad.
Right.
Yeah. For the most part, I think, most of you guys, come to more practices than they would calls, obviously, and train regularly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of different than back when Todd and I started in this department. It was, I think more guys would come to calls and less guys would come to practices, just because I think practices were less exciting.
Yeah.
Because it was always kind of the same thing. Too, right? Yeah, they're super short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now, like, we're running 3-hour practices once a week. And I mean, Christ, back in the day, there were
30 minutes.
I was going to say, like, an hour and a half. Hour, you know, after you sit around and talk about things and then get things started, and because there'd be no real like pre-set up for stuff, and you set it up in that moment, so you're losing even more time.
I think in today's like day and age, everybody's time is so valuable, mm-hmm. that you can't really afford to show up with a half-assed plan for practice. You know, it's something that you have to plan ahead of time. You have to make sure it's good. You're putting the value of time and skill set, forward. Because if you tried to run it like, we used to in years gone by, that's where you would get back to. You'd have more members coming to calls than you would to practice. Yeah. You have to value guys and gals' times. Make it good, make it challenging. Most people are pretty switched on if they want to be in the fire service. And if you come to a pretty boring or a lame practice, like we try to avoid classroom at all costs. There's maybe a handful a year that you have to get through.
Yeah.
But we definitely dive into the hands-on practice as often as possible, and that keeps people engaged. Like Scott was saying, like when you don't know what they don't know, it can be a challenge on the fire ground. Like we have a complement right now of about 37 in our hall. I know you guys are creeping up around the same number there now.
Yeah,
it's not a huge number, but it's still like, in the heat of the moment, you're looking over at, him or her, and you're like, do they know what they're doing here? Like, have we trained this? And not so much for the seasoned firefighters, but for more of the rookies, right? Like we're all hands on with the rookies. Scott basically has our TO. He sees them through the entire way. And as another officer that does a lot of our training, you try to be with that group as much as possible. But we still have a group of 30 other ones that we have to go out and make a good, training night for as well. So, so it's tough to follow along and make sure that you are aware of what step they're on. And what step, they're, good for a water supply, which might be, they might have to run a tender. They're good with hose movement and water management. So, okay, now they could use some exterior water application. But at what point, when you have such a large group, if you're not doing, good, solid, weekly practices with them, it's really easy to start to lose grasp of where everybody lands, mm-hmm. which then can be kind of dangerous.
Yeah. It's always a fine line of juggling mm-hmm. the practices to the time commitments to everybody. We do our best to try and organize things for everyone, especially summertime. Sometimes it gets busy.
Yep.
We want to be out and about. But there is a certain level of dedication. You have to keep coming in for certain things. Some people complain about it in our apartment. There's some nights I'm complaining about, like, oh man, I don't want to go in tonight. Right.
Yeah.
But like, you have to, like, this is serious stuff. Like, this isn't a little old boys club like it used to be back in the day.
Sure.
This is some serious shit that we're doing. And we're doing it on the side for fun.
Yeah.
Like, especially you guys are strictly volunteer. We're paying on call. We have a small amount of stipend with it, but for the most part, I don't even look at the paycheck. I could care less about the paycheck.
I'm not getting rich.
I started in the fire service following my dad's footsteps, and it was a blast doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a certain level of commitment you need to make time for it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going. Yeah.
you definitely have to be committed with training. I tell my wife all the time, there's no level of training that's enough for what we do. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of the, some of the older members too, you have to tell them, you know, I know we're not paid. I know we're not career, but we still have to be professional. We have to remain professional. And you're essentially, you're still doing the same job. So show up and act like it is one of my biggest things.
Yeah. I think that's huge, right? Like when somebody phones 911 and they ask for the fire department to show up, when we pull up, they're not like, oh, it's okay. They're just volunteers and expect less. No, when the fire department shows up, they expect perfection and nothing less. So it doesn't matter how big your check is or if it's nothing. When we show up, they're expecting perfection. Yeah. So, I mean, that's such a high standard. It's an impossible standard. So the least that we can do is show up and train to try to get as damn close to that as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fire doesn't care.
No, fire doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
Fire doesn't care if you're paid or not.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. We're going to start wrapping it up here. Anything, Kyle, that you want to bring up before we come to a close?
I kind of touched on it earlier, but the mental health. If you're thinking about getting into this, if you're already into it, take care of your mental health. I distance myself enough. Now my wife knows what to look for, but it took me probably 6 years from the call that was really bugging me to finally go and talk to someone. And I actually took a line of duty death in our neighboring EMS department to actually get me there. So, just definitely take care of yourself. There's always going to be that one call, but don't let that one call determine the end of your life or drinking too much or getting into drug use or any of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like looking out for each other is key, right? More training and awareness within our departments, and include your spouses or significant others, right? Because they're the first ones that will start to see some of the change in us. When somebody goes through a tough event, you know, they're really good at hiding symptoms, right?
And yeah,
your spouses usually see that first. Mm-hmm. So anytime you have a training and awareness course on these things, include your spouses. So like I said, they know what to look for. And the more and more you talk about it within your departments, the more and more normal it feels. It's normalizing the situations, right? Because these are normal normal feelings to have for abnormal events, essentially, right? Yeah. Like we're not wired to be going into horrific, traumatic scenes day in and day out. You know, we're human. We break. Finding time for yourselves, getting out, doing some physical activity, whatever that may be. For people, just it's proven. You know, 10 minutes of physical activity after an event starts making some chemical changes in your body and brain, and starts helping you process the event. So
yeah, absolutely,
yeah, yeah. Well said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't let it define yourself, right?
Yeah, don't. Don't take the route that I started to take. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I definitely appreciate you sharing that with us and all of our listeners. It takes people, you know, with some courage to speak up. People that have been through it, you know, themselves, or, you know, maybe they maybe helped a fellow firefighter through something. Just, you know, getting that knowledge out there, getting, you know, just kind of normalizing it, right? Like, there's a stat, something like every human is kind of wired to deal with like 5 traumatic events in their lifetime. And on average, we're going to wipe that out in like the course of a year. Right. So
yeah,
we are burning up annually our lifespan of traumatic events to try to process. And like for most people, that's going to be like that will a death of a parent or two or like a pet even, right? Like something is like, as I don't want to say simple, because though they're like, a pet is very, very important, but that might be one of their top 5 events, right? Mm-hmm. Like then all of these things that we in the service go and deal with, is amplified over and over and over again, and it takes one. And it doesn't matter how, like, what it is, how big, how small, it doesn't matter, because one event might trigger something from the past. You know, just getting that normalcy of it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to reach out for help. And it's normal. And the more that we can normalize that through newer members coming on and just changing that culture from the old days when you would just rub some dirt on it, you know, have a bottle, where now, hey, like, let's not, you know, sewer my marriage and sewer my Monday to Friday job. Like, let's actually get some help here and get myself through it so I can continue doing that thing that I love. And because there's not a lot of people wired to do the thing that we love. So to remove somebody that's super good at something because they didn't have available, or even they just maybe weren't mentally ready to seek that help. Yeah, I just think it's super, super good to continue to spread that awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, Kyle, thank you very much for coming and talking with us, and thanks for sharing that with us as well. Any more, guys?
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on, bud.
All right. I appreciate you guys having me. It was a good talk.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you once again. So, Kyle Tomine, First Lieutenant from Verona Fire. All right, well, I'd like to thank Kyle once again for coming on tonight and taking the time. It was very late in his neck of the world there.
East. Neck of the world? What?
The fucking east. It's neck of the
world. John's tired.
John's tired. It was not late here, but John's tired.
It was late there.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you, Kyle. Much appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming on. Let's jump into some shout outs.
All right.
Modus. Yeah, so it's been awesome. Paul's been texting me throughout the week, sending me
texting you too.
So he's blowing all of our phones.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Get a few little things and
some
pictures and yeah, some future product changes. So
yeah. Yeah, we've been kind of helping them with their I think maybe we're not helping them. Maybe we're making it worse with their product line a little bit. With some new stuff for auto education.
Next line.
The X line. Mm-hmm. Is that are we allowed to talk about that? Yeah, the Auto X line.
I think we talked about it.
The Modus X.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did. So yeah, we're working on that. Working on some medical bag stuff, mm-hmm. and then some ideas on some wildland gear, sprinklers, yep. and things like that. So, mm-hmm. But what their big claim to fame is a sniper tool. We actually have one right here.
Hey. Oh, nice.
Did they make this color anymore?
I
haven't seen this color in a while. But anyways, stagger.
I think they do. Because we had some wedges that were that color at the show. Still, yeah.
But yeah, Snagger, big claim to fame. It's multi-use, 102 uses now. I can only get through about 20, I think.
Yeah.
Before my brain goes, what else is there? obviously, the big one is getting that 2.5 controlled while you're trying to run it. You can run it. It's kind of solo. Obviously, that also has the 1.5 on the other side. Mm-hmm. Glass breaker. Drywall cutter,
gas shut off.
Okay. It's actually a great tool. I take when I do in my 360 as an officer.
Yep.
It just like
hand does
it,
a lot.
Stay there, just, you know, fighting off dogs. Oh, it's another 100 trees.
Perfect.
I don't know if that's a thing. Modus.
And there's a discount code for Modus?
Yep, DTFF5.
Yeah. Awesome. Then the other one is Stop the Bleed.
That's you, buddy. Yep, you got your three methods of bleed control. You got direct pressure, wound packing, and tourniquet applications. If you're going to use tourniquet, make sure you use a good one. If you're going to have a tourniquet, get it out of the wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And was it stopthebleed dot?
Dot org or dot ca. We'll take two, yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Depending on where you're listening.
Yep.
Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yeah. Got a little bit of trouble today as we're in another type of coffee company. It's just at 20 today. And the owners of Wolf Tree saw me. I'm like, oh, he's the only one I had clean. Sorry. But at the same time, in my coffee cup. Well, it's not, I have all three coffees.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, the initial attack blend, which is our blend.
Lovely medium dark roast. And, yeah.
Yeah. Been crushing their cold brew. Mm-hmm. Lately, that is phenomenal.
Unofficially called the cold start.
Unofficially the cold start. <yeah. laughs>
And where can we find Wolf Tree at online?
Yeah, they're on Facebook, Instagram. They've got their Facebook page, which just got updated, which is really cool. WolfTreeCoffee.com, I believe. Hop on there. You can see all of their product offerings. If you look at the initial attack blend, which we partnered with them, it'll give you all the information about the coffee and about the $2 of each sale. The proceeds will do the Honor Society and the Honor Ranch. Support an awesome company, drink some awesome coffee, and on the backside of that, you are making a $2 donation. So awesome all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that just that donation on top of it, it's can't go wrong. Come on.
Yeah.
Or from Wolf Tree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tanner.
Tanner Olson, country music out of the west coast of Canada. They are on tour all over right now and doing a bunch of things. Lots of new music coming out. Mm-hmm. Check them out on Spotify or wherever you find music.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, can you grab a shirt there?
Oh, yeah.
So, again, just a reminder, we have our shirts that we are selling. So, currently, the GTFF Moose Firebreak shirt. We're just shipping through Canada. However, probably next week we're going to be international. Just waiting to hear back. So send us a message via email on that. And I think let's check if it's going to be actually. I think it's going to be DTFF shop very shortly here. But in the meantime, or is it just the DTFF.com?
We are the worst. Check's on Facebook, I think.
The link is on Facebook. So very shortly, so I was talking with my wife, we're going to be changing it to the actual DTFF shop at gmail.com. That's going to be a great one coming up. If that doesn't work, find it on Facebook and we'll send you all that stuff.
Yep.
So I currently got a couple more shirts to be going out here. So,
nice.
So $35 will get that shipped anywhere in Canada.
It's important to remember that second F or you might find something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is.
Down to fight fire.
We're right back to the beads.
Yeah. Any other channels? No, that's it. And then, of course, you have us. So Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, those are kind of our biggest platforms, TikTok. Give us a like, give us a follow. Send some messages, emails through Messenger as well, Facebook Messenger, Instagram Messenger. You can get a hold of us. We actually have people paying attention to that now, which is fantastic.
Amazing.
Shout out to our spouses for that. Is our other Facebook shut down yet, our old one?
It is still live. We're still hopeful to get a few more people over, but it will be getting shut down quite quickly. So
look for our Facebook page. It's the one currently with the Moose logo on it. That's the one you're watching on it. The other one will be shut down.
DTFF.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody. Mm-hmm. Any more there, Scott?
Nope. Good night.
Ash.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good night.